The weather is fascinating to me. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. Sorry for the oversharing as we start this installment of the M2M podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market program. I know I'm not alone in the interest in the weather. Some of you, by occupational hazard, are bound to the highs, lows, floods and droughts, and everything in between. James Romer has made a career of the weather and agriculture. We discuss his move to the Midwest following a tennis career and how we may be settling into a La Nina pattern. We'll talk about the differences between La Nina and El Nino and other weather stories in this M2M podcast. Never a dull moment when you talk about the weather, is it, James?
Absolutely not, especially in Iowa.
That's right. You know, you've been doing it for a while. You've been in Florida for a couple of years, but you're no stranger to the Corn Belt.
Well, actually, I didn't even know where the Corn Belt was after college in the early 80s, and I came out to work for Freeze Notice Weather, who really got me involved in commodities back then. And I drove west from New York with a broken muffler in 30 below zero weather, and I found out pretty quickly what the Corn Belt was.
And so why Iowa?
Well, really, I was playing some competitive tennis as a kid and was teaching for a while, but I really wanted to get an agricultural background, gave up the tennis career, worked for the Freeze Notice back in the 80s and early 90s, and just wanted a change and wanted to learn about agriculture, really.
Yeah. So Freeze Notice, I mean, you'll hear that on the radio over time. You know, they would sponsor whatever, you know, that was the radio station's weather forecast, you know, the Freeze Notice forecast. And you still hear that every once in a while. At that time, people used to think it was just the National Weather Service. But why did Freeze Notice start?
A lot of people thought it was a Freeze Notice. My goodness, there's going to be a freeze in August in the Corn Belt. No, it was actually the name of Charlie Notice and Harvey Freeze, who are still good friends of mine. But they were really the first small company to do private consulting in the commodity industry. I think back in the 80s, we were the first weather service on DTN. We consulted with ConAgra and Centra Soya and FC Stone, you know, who and Doug Jackson, all those people. And they really relied on our expertise more than the weather service because we had a real agricultural tilt to it. And we're pretty good at looking out. Back then, 7-8 days in a row was a long-range forecast. Now today I'm doing it 2 or 3 months. So anyway.
At that time, you know, the weather, I mean, we all think about, oh, you know, we look up in the sky or we think, 2-4 days. The best way to guarantee rain always, that hasn't changed, put the hay down and you know it's going to rain no matter what the forecast says.
Right.
Why is that? We know weather is extremely important on that. Today and a week for sure. I mean, we have to know the 7-day forecast now, let alone the 30-day forecast. Why is that?
Well, as a farmer in Iowa, for example, right now, corn's at what, $3.35. Are you going to hedge in May and June ahead of the main pollination period of July? If we get good weather, which unfortunately, well, fortunately for farmers, but not fortunately, if you want prices to go up, you need to hedge or buy puts or short corn a month or so in advance. Unfortunately, we may see corn down to $3 with really good weather over the next 4 or 5 weeks. So knowing the forecast longer term is important from a hedging and also trading perspective.
So who looks at the longer range forecast more, the traders than the farmers? Who do you think?
I think both. I mean, for example, if you're a farmer in Iowa and you know you don't want to be selling 90% of your 2020 production right now, because with La Nina forming, there's a pretty good chance after this demise in prices, possibly the next 4 or 5 weeks during pollination, we could have a drought in Argentina. That could mean at much higher prices this winter, which is the Argentina summer. And if La Nina continues to strengthen, we could see actually crop problems next year. So, you know, though we're kind of bearish right now, and a lot of people are asking about how to trade this, 6 months to a year from now, prices could be quite a bit higher than this. So you want to know the long-range forecast too, not just the next few weeks.
The Argentina story is its own monster because now we read in our U.S. ag reports what's the weather in Brazil? What's the weather in Argentina? What's the weather in Eastern Europe, in those areas, because of the global landscape of things? Is that why we have to pay attention to those other areas?
Yeah, Paul, of course. You know, back when I was in Iowa in the 80s and early 90s, my goodness, Argentina and Brazil produced, what, one-third to one-half of that of the corn and soybean production they do now. And the area's expanded. You know, there's been deforestation, obviously, in the Amazon, northern Brazil, which I'm pretty much against. And obviously, they've expanded bean acres by more than 100%. So I think Argentina and Brazil combined is now a bigger export market than the United States. It wasn't back, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago.
We also have a bigger demand for the products globally. We've taught crop or communities and economies to figure out how to put this in. So there is still that greater demand. Tom Fitzmyer is going to be on the Market to Market show by the time this airs. He's been saying for months, and I always bring it up to him, you've been saying we have a huge corn crop already in the bins, and now we've got this other one. If we can have trendline yields, we could have a 33-year high in the amount of supply.
Yeah,
that's got to be a bearish factor on the market, right?
It certainly is. And unfortunately, and again, I hope everybody is safe in Iowa from COVID-19 doing social distancing. But obviously, the ethanol situation hasn't helped either with a lot of plants closing down. So it's not even a double whammy. It's a triple whammy bearish reaction, which I think will probably take corn prices to under $3 a bushel, given the fact La Nina is just not strong enough yet to warrant any major drought right now in the Corn Belt. Obviously, for Iowa farmers, you want the drought in the Eastern Corn Belt and
right.
Fields in Iowa, but right now there's just still a lot of rain in the forecast, so I don't see prices rallying during pollination anytime soon.
We're going to get to a scientific definition in just a moment, La Nina, El Nino, but I want to get back to the weather premium. When I read the words weather premium, what does that mean in the market?
Well, I think the prices could be, you know, 10 to 20% lower than where they are right now, as you said, with the global supply so large and also the ethanol plant situation and low crude prices pressuring corn. But there's still 30 to 50 cents a premium just in case there is reduced yields this summer. If we have a hot, dry July, the market is still building in some of the potential for that happening. If we see this improved rainfall and no extreme heat, that premium will be sucked out of the market during pollination over the next 4 weeks, which probably is going to happen.
Who puts in the weather premium?
Good question. I think the hedgers, the commercials. I mean, there's a huge speculative short position in the market right now. Typically, you want to look for opportunities when all the specs run for the other direction and cover their short positions, or if everybody's long on a drought and the drought breaks, they all run for cover and the market collapses. But the hedgers, the commercials, are not going to be selling at these prices right now until they're pretty sure the crop size is going to be. And then there'll be all this forward contracting by a lot of the farmers and the hedgers, and the market will continue to spiral downward. So typically speculators are wrong, but unfortunately at this point, I think they're right this year.
You mentioned how they're all one position and not the other one. I think John Roach, senior market analyst of the show, always talks about if they're on one side of the boat, maybe you ought to be on the other side of the boat or get ready when they go from one to the other. Do you buy that description?
Yeah, I love being a contrarian, but at the same time, you just can't be a contrarian just to be one. You have to look at the fundamentals. And by goodness, the one thing that would take this market out of the doldrums, and the only thing that I see, is getting 2 to 3 or 4 weeks of hot, dry weather and having depleted soil moisture going into July, which is not the case. We had a little bit of dry weather in Iowa a week or two ago. That's being relieved with a lot more rain this weekend and next week. So, again, I don't see that major short covering rally right now at all, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, James, I have a guy in southwest Iowa who says, we're dry, we're really dry. How come his 2 to 4 county area doesn't matter in the overall picture?
Oh, right. I mean, looking at the global supply situation, I hopefully he's going to get some rain here soon, which I think he will. Again, from a production standpoint, we're not talking more than 5 to 10% of production being affected by dry weather right now. We need it between 30 to 50% or more, like in the 2011-2012 drought. You know, I remember living there in 1993. It was the opposite. We had major flooding in the Western Corn Belt, so farmers just were demised. Yet the Eastern Belt had record yields, so farmers in Indiana and Ohio benefited, unfortunately, from all the flooding and lower yields in the Western Corn Belt. We need a thing to switch. We need a drought in the Eastern Corn Belt and great moisture for Iowa. And unfortunately, everybody's going to get good moisture, it looks like, heading into July this year.
So you talked about 30 to 40, 50% of an area. But again, people always kind of wonder, how is it that the one side can't influence the other one? How is it that one side of the Corn Belt determines the other one, or vice versa? I don't understand how it can always be, you know, you might have two states that are super dry, and it might be in the middle or it might be patches, but it needs to be a collective for the market to react or to read it up or down?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. You know, usually, yes, but if we had really tight global supplies with ending stocks of corn, say, a billion and a half bushels, not with maybe, what, 2 or 3 billion plus, then one or two states makes a big difference. But we have such mammoth supplies right now, it's just not going to make any difference. Can we see a 10 or 20 cent rally, you know, 5% move if it gets dry for a week or two? Yes. But unless we have 5 or 6 states, given the global supply situation, having drought, I just don't see it eating into the global supplies. That's the problem.
Do you get to the, it's got to be in Iowa or it doesn't matter, or Indiana or an I state?
Well, Nebraska, you know, Iowa, the one and two biggest producing states of corn. I think those, yeah. And Illinois, those three states are the main driver of the market.
Right. All right. Right now, we always ask Elwin Taylor up at Iowa State. Now he's emeritus. La Nina, El Nino. He defines the two. Define them for me.
Well, to make it simple, because there's many variables, not just ocean temperatures that go into El Nino and La Nina. We won't get into that too much. But typically, when the eastern Pacific at the equator begins to cool, like it is now around Peru, that expands further west across the Central Pacific near Australia, that's considered a La Nina. The opposite happens with an El Nino. You see all this warm ocean currents across Peru into the Central Pacific, tends to bring great yields, bumper crops to the Midwest. The first real El Nino that affected production of corn and soybeans was back in 1973, when it wiped out the entire Peruvian fish population, anchovies, and the price of soybean meal soared back in the early 70s because foreign buyers had to use meal to supplement for the anchovies, right, for cattle and livestock. So South America tends to have more droughts during El Nino. North America tends to have more droughts during La Nina. The problem is right now, to get higher grain prices in a strong La Nina is it's only the beginning stages. It's only cool off the coast of Peru. You need to have it further west in the Central Pacific into the east of Australia, like in 1974, 1954, the Dust Bowl years of the mid-30s. 2011, the bad drought. 88 was a bad drought in Iowa. So luckily for farmers, it's not expanding further west, the cool temperatures yet, to signify a strong La Nina. Come the fall and winter, the South American summer, it may strengthen enough, which could impact Argentina soybean production. That would be great news for Midwestern farmers then. Yeah.
Is there anything that influences those ocean temperatures other than just Mother Nature? I mean, are there other factors that you've had to look at that have changed over 30 years?
Well, I know there's a lot of controversy, and unfortunately it's become very politicized. I personally, being a scientist, really do believe in global warming and climate change. I mean, look what's been going on with Australia. A million animals or billion animals being killed. Record warm temperatures. 9 of the last 11 years, record warmth in the United States. This is a cycle, perhaps. But if you look at the oceans going back 100, 150 years, they continue to warm. So El Nino has been more prevalent than La Nina is because of the warming oceans. In the longer term, actually, can benefit crops in the Midwest if there's more El Ninos than La Ninas. So I do think that, you know, CO2, the oceans absorbing all this stuff, has created a net warming of the oceans. And I, unfortunately, don't see anything changing anytime soon from that situation.
The scientists always get the, well, or, you know, that's pretty arrogant to think 50 years, 100 years, we've had an influence on a world that's been around for millions of years, or longer?
Well, I'd like to think of it, if you had a helium balloon, right, and you fill it up with air, after about a half an hour to an hour, the helium's going to go out of the balloon, the balloon's going to fall back. Well, that doesn't happen with CO2. All this industrialization of the last 50 to 100 years, it's not going out to space. It's a self-contained sphere. It's staying in the atmosphere. Where's it going to go? The oceans or into the air? That's it. If the atmosphere was like a helium balloon and CO2 could just escape, I wouldn't be believing in it. But I certainly, unfortunately, feel it's a situation that is getting worse. And there are a lot of people that are saying, oh, we're going into a solar minimum right now and no solar activity on the sun. We can go back thousands of years and see the atmosphere and planet has cooled. That may be offset, the net cooling from the low solar activity because of climate change over the last 30 to 50 years. We'll have to wait and see. But I don't think we're going to have the frequency of La Niña's and the frequency of severe winters, like many other scientists that are skeptics suggest, from low solar activity.
You mentioned solar activity. That's all right. Sue Martin, a regular analyst for us, also mentions solar activity a lot. Kind of explain that, why I need to watch that, or what does that even mean when she mentions that, or when you mention it?
Well, it's a complex subject, and I'd be happy to maybe send you a link about it to Market and Market or do a blog on it for all your followers. But Elwin Taylor used to talk about low solar activity, which when you have very few sunspots on the sun, and every 11 to 22 years there's a cycle, the sun has been going for millions of years. There's low activity and there's high activity. And Elwin Taylor did a lot of research. The Dust Bowl days of the mid-30s, the Dust Bowl days of the mid-50s, when you have low solar activity, you tend to have droughts in the Midwest. Well, because of crops being planted closer together over the last 20 or 30 years and what we call more evapotranspiration, right? There tends to be more moisture in the atmosphere. And because of the warming oceans, which I think has offset somewhat the low sunspot activity, we have not seen that relationship to low grain yields and low solar, mid-70s, mid-90s, low solar activity. We had generally good crops. So it's a very complex subject. The biggest thing that reduces corn yields in Iowa and the Western Corn Belt, other than a strong La Niña, is something called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation Index, probably a stronger correlation than low solar. That has to do with the eastern Pacific off the coast of California. Without getting too technical, when it's really cool off the coast of California, the ocean temperatures, and you have a La Niña, those are our strongest droughts. Right now, it's warm off the coast of California. So though we have a beginning of a La Niña and a beginning of a low solar cycle, I don't believe the solar cycle is going to offset the climate change we're seeing, but luckily the warming oceans and just off the coast of California. The PDO is not negative yet. And as a result, I don't see grain yields collapsing this summer. Hopefully that explains a little bit.
Decadal Oscillation was the name of the podcast episode I did with Elwin Taylor. So the audience is familiar a little bit with the topic. I love it. But Elwin talks about weather pattern in cycles. When you talk to him about a climate change question, he says we are in the middle, and I'm not even going to do an Elwin Taylor impersonation. We all can do it, but we're in the middle of an irregular pattern of weather. We go 14 years this way, and then usually another 10 to 14 here, and then another. So he lays it out that we're just in the middle of a little more instability right now, which would, in his eyes, explain more hurricanes, more tornadoes, more weather, the regular wet weather or dry weather on an extreme side. He just says that's what we're in. Do you subscribe to any of that theory?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Dr. Taylor. And, I certainly am a big believer in cycles. My goodness, it affects everything, our moods, our birth cycles, the weather. I just think the cycles have been altered a little bit, the frequency of such, because, in my opinion, the warming planet. So, for example, he was right. You look every 10 to 14, 15 years back from the mid-30s all the way to 1988, there were these drought cycles in the Midwest. Well, though we've had a couple periods after 88 of abnormal yields, corn and soybeans in Iowa and the Midwest, the real last full drought that occurred, major drought that affected the grain market, was, I think, 20-something years, not 14. 88 was the last big drought in 2011. That's a long time. And that may be because of the warming oceans, the PDO being positive, warm off the west coast of California. Warming oceans, more El Ninos, tends to increase crop production. That could, so the cycle maybe has been broken a little bit, in my opinion.
Or just the sample size might be wider. I mean, you cut that tree down and you look at its the rings, and sometimes the rings are wider or narrower in certain times. The hurricanes, you're used to seeing those forecasts. This year, we actually had a hurricane, the remnants of a tropical storm, come up the Mississippi Valley, head on up almost into Canada. We just don't get that very often here. And why is that?
It's the warming oceans. I mean, I'm telling you, look what happened over Bermuda last year. One of our best friends was buried underneath rubble for hours, was one of the last people to get out of there. Interesting, though, Paul, I've looked at like 15 hurricane seasons that had two or three tropical storms in June. 11 or 12 of them ended up having a pretty weak season. So just because you have an active season in June doesn't mean you're going to have the hurricane season having category fives in September and October. Now, because La Nina is starting to form, you tend to have a very active September and October. That's still possible, even though we had a pretty active June. But right now we're seeing all this African dust coming off the coast of West Africa. I don't know if you heard about this.
I saw you tweet it this morning, and so I was going to ask you about that too, but keep going with African dust.
So I'm not quite sure what's causing it this year. Between the locust in Africa and the dust, it's been a disaster. But the dust, travels thousands of miles to the west, can actually kill hurricanes if it continues into August and September. So that's what we're going to be watching out for, because without that dust, because La Nina is forming, and because of the warming oceans, we could have at least three or four category fives. Now, I have a software called Climate Predict that looks at historical analogs going back 70, 80 years. I have all sorts of data of historical storm tracks and Corn Belt weather, et cetera, from my program. The one thing it doesn't have in there is African dust. It's very hard to get that data. And if this dust continues, it would be a blessing for many people that the hurricane season ends up being less severe than many people expect. So we have to watch this over the next 2 or 3 months.
Blessing for less severe weather if those areas are dry, which last year, part of the Southeast, in the last 2 years, they've had some drier conditions in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, into Florida, even the Panhandle. And then there's that theory of, well, if it's dry there, it that's what backs up into us, into the Corn Belt. Is there any correlation there? Is that an accurate way to look at droughts?
Yeah, it's been it varies. I mean, sometimes these droughts develop in Texas and Oklahoma, like I think in 1988, moved north by June or July. The one area I'm actually concerned about right now is the Texas cotton growing areas. That drought could actually continue with a weak La Nina. So there have been some cases the droughts begin in the southeast, move west. Other times, more typically, I think, they develop in the plains in California and the Rockies and move, just expand across the Western Corn Belt. It's still possible if the oceans cool a little bit further west in the next 4 to 6 weeks more quickly, that parts of Iowa and the Dakotas could end up having a little bit of hot weather late summer that may nip soybean yields a little bit. But I think for the corn crop, we're pretty safe here for the next few weeks.
All right, I always have to ask my father's question here. And I had a conversation with a guy who still lives up in the home area, but he's on the north side of town. We were on the south side of town. Okay. We would be in town, and we would drive 5 miles south, and then we'd start to turn to make that down the 3/4 mile and a half down the gravel road. And invariably, it was raining in town, but we got 2 miles from home, and it stopped. We didn't even get a sidewalk wet. We couldn't see 6 miles north. Yeah. And it dry when we pulled into the home place. Why is that?
it's not a macro scale major La Nina. It's a local isolated storm. I living in Iowa back in the 80s, I saw a lot of that. I go, wow, there's a thunderstorm over there. I'm going to go chase a tornado. And then all of a sudden it was dry. What am I doing here? There's no rain here. Right. So Iowa's weather is amazing. What do they say? It'll change every 5 seconds. Right. just an isolated situation. I remember one time, I think in, mid to late 80s in Iowa, it was 80 degrees at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I was chasing tornadoes, just saw a few funnel clouds. The next morning, it was 26 degrees and snowing in Des Moines. I miss it. I miss Iowa weather. I wish it back.
Well, you know, and Dad would always, you know, why is Mother Nature so against us? And he would just get so angry about things. But it is. It's the time of year. Again, the guy on the north side of town, he posted a weather, an animation of the radar. And he got another half inch, and I had blue skies all day, you know, 100 miles away. So, I mean, it's that non-widespreadness that always kind of frustrates everybody. And because they look at, with the commodity markets, you look at what happens in your area, you see your 200 acres out of the window. You don't see the 2,000, 20,000 acres that really matter on a larger scale. We get very frustrated because last year, when it was so wet, we see all of this rain in the Missouri Valley, in the Mississippi Valley, and we see all of this area, and we're like, well, where's the weather premium in that? But it goes back to, or does it go back to, the old rain makes grain.
Yeah, that's why it's really important to follow, I mean, services, maybe mine, give me a little sales pitch there. So it really understands the psychology of trading, the psychology of what hedgers and big commercials are actually doing. They look at the broader picture around the world, not just locally. And there are a lot of services out there, certainly, but very few that really understand the psychology of trading and how grain markets are going to fluctuate on it.
But it also changed. Do you ever hear that story of back, I don't know if it was the 80s or if it was during the 88 drought or that there was always the story, somebody took a garden hose and shot water on top of the Chicago Board of Trade and, oh, it's raining. By golly, you know, sell or buy, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah, I know. Not really reality, but they need to look at the radar. The radar wasn't as expensive back then. Not just one dot over Chicago, but you're right. Very often the market would react to that. Or I think, what was his name? Skilling was on TV.
Yeah.
WGN.
Everybody listened to Tom Skilling, WGN. That was, yeah. He was the gospel.
You know, it's amazing. You know, folklore, like Red Sky at Morn, Sailor Take Warn, or if you're like the fish bite best when the wind's from the west, fish bite least when the wind's from the east. A lot of folklore that's been around in the Farmer's Almanac for hundreds of years, sometimes better than these computer models out there, you know? So one of my main dreams and goals has been to develop a model, which I've been working on with a fellow from MIT for 3 years, again, called Climate Predict, which uses teleconnections, sea ice, which is not much these days, over the Arctic, La Nina, ocean temperatures 20,000 miles away, to predict weather months and months in advance. Now guest models. And I probably should be putting some of the folklore in there too.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like, well, you know, the folklore says, not my weather map that I've with my MIT scientist and my scientist background together. So you have a service if people, because we all subscribe to different things.
Yeah.
We can subscribe to stuff of yours too.
Yeah. I mean, on my website, I started this new business. I used to advise major hedge funds for many years. A lot of them went belly up, not because of me, because they got greedy and big, whatever. But I have a new service called Weather Wealth at bestweatherinc.com. It's fairly expensive for the average farmer. I mean, it's a couple hundred dollars a month, but I have traders all over the world. To them, that doesn't really mean much. If they can make one trade in corn, make $5,000 a contract or whatever. But for farmers, I have special deals that's like 70% less expensive. I have some Midwestern farmers that are clients that are subscribing to my newsletter, Weather Wealth, some in Australia, Brazil, all over the world. So, yeah, you can certainly email me, and if I can help you in any way, make some better decisions and get so much clutter and noise out there, there's not really a lot of good information about long-range forecasting, what this means to my bottom line and my production. And if I can help you, I'd love to, yeah.
You know. Well, I'll get close to landing here, James. We have our market analysts come on, and they have newsletters or voice things like that, and they're trying to assist on a client. Do you pretty much have to subscribe to something, whether it's radio and grain analysis, to be able to make it in a global environment that we have? Because my 2,000, 10,000 acres, I have to have somebody that's helping me, right? I mean, we live in a subscription, or at least that's maybe good sales to say you need it because of those factors.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have my experience and my talents, been doing this for 35 years. That's not to say there's some very sophisticated farmers out in Iowa, and watching the Weather Channel, well, they don't do long range, but if you kind of follow some of that and some of the free information on Google, you can make some, you know, relatively sound decisions. But if you're trying to plan longer term, and that, by that I mean 1 to 3 or 1 to 3 months or even a year in advance, I think you really need to rely on someone that has experience predicting long range forecasting, and just get rid of all the noise out there. There's so many different opinions. But you could get by certainly with some free subscription services too in the short term. That helps.
You know? It all helps, right? All right. James, maybe someday we'll get you back to Iowa when we get back opening and people are traveling, and we'll show you around.
I love it. I still have a golf club I threw up in a tree 30 years ago. I think I shot 110. That's still sitting up in Ankeny, Iowa, at one of the golf courses up there. I have to go back and visit that golf club. It's a 2-iron, by the way.
James Romer, thank you so very much for the time.
All right. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks again to James Romer for the discussion. Feedback? Hit us up, market@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.